Today on The Grave Talks, the haunting of a home. When a home goes through multiple owners, multiple decades, many things are bound to happen there. Good moments, bad moments, moments of strife, moments of pleasure. All in all, the record of what happened within the walls of the house ultimately reside with those who lived it. But what do you do when the walls begin to talk long after the former residents have moved on? Are they coming back trying to tell their story? Do they have a warning or a message for the latest round of inhabitants of their haunted house? Today, we hear the story of one such haunted house and its current life in Indiana with paranormal investigator Jessica Ainsley.
So from the history my team had done, it started way back in the 1800s, I believe, early 1900s. And there was this house. It was a big house. And they had a guy that had lived there with his family. And he was one of the higher-ups in the city. And they were doing fine, and then all of a sudden there was some turmoil within the family, and basically he lost his reputation. And then they ended up, there were things like, it had to do with accidents, like there was like a buggy accident around the area. There was and resulted in death. And then there was a family that ended up moving in there, and they were like renting part of the building out because it was, like I said, a very large house. And there was a family of a man, a woman, and their two children. And I can't quite remember their names, but basically the woman had said that the man in charge was abusive. And abusive not only to her, but to the children as well. And so that kind of thing happens a lot in history, unfortunately. But that was the situation with this family. And she ended up asking for a divorce. And she moved out. And luckily the children lived through that whole ordeal. A lot of people had said, oh, well, there was a child spirit there. And it was from this. Well, it turns out that they had gotten out of the house away from the father. So we did a lot of research on that, and that's kind of what we came up with. And then we had talked to the owner of the house, and he had given us a little bit more history. And he said that there was at one point, not only did the one family live there, but they ended up turning it into a triplex. So basically three apartments in one building. And so there was a woman that lived upstairs who actually ended up committing suicide via hanging in the closet. And I had picked up on that before going there. And then there was a man that lived downstairs, and he seemed to be, the spirit we picked up on there, he seemed to be very religious. And also seems like he kind of hid behind his religion and was not very nice to women, it seems. So we're not sure if that spirit was the guy who lived upstairs at one point and kind of was abusive to his family members that ended up going downstairs or what. But that was kind of the history that we ended up coming up with. I know that the owner, when we had gone there, had said that people that would come to investigate, there were quite a few that would have troubles after leaving the house, which we found very interesting. And at one point, our team leader was like, are you sure you want to do this, guys? Are you sure you want to investigate this place? I was like, well, we drove down here, you know, because we're about 2 hours, 3 hours away.
Mm-hmm.
So it was very interesting to be in that house, and it definitely had an effect on me personally.
Before you went into the house and before you actually did an investigation there, did you do a lot of research on the house? Did you know all of this information prior to actually going through the doors?
I personally did not, because like any other investigation, being a medium, I want to be validated in anything that I receive from the other side. We do have a historian and researcher on our team. He did the research, but he knows better than to tell me or the other medium involved. So I do what I call automatic writing, where I basically meditate and I write down everything that I get before even stepping foot into the house. And then we compare notes once we get to the location via talking to the person that lives there or the client. And that's exactly what we did. I personally got things that I had never experienced before, because the first time I went there, I was just now, like we had said before in a previous conversation, opening back up. Mm-hmm. And so I had things that scared me that I had gotten that I had never seen before, even as a child, with this particular investigation. But like I said, I didn't know anything except the fact that it was in Indiana. I didn't know the name of the house, nothing.
Mm-hmm.
So for me, I knew nothing, but the team knew things going in. So at one point we were sitting there, and he was kind of, the owner was giving the history, and he had been talking about paranormal lockdown, where they had radar coming through, ground penetrating radar during that show. I guess it was on that show. And said that there were some like burial mounds and things like that. And at the point in time of that part of the interview with the client, I was sitting on the couch, and he pointed to me and he said, "Well, there's even one right underneath where you're sitting." So I was very unnerved at that. So that kind of freaked me out a little bit, knowing that there, right above or right below where I was sitting, there was, you know, a body.
Yeah. I mean, knowing, having that knowledge, and what were, even before having the knowledge, I guess is my question, what were you feeling? What was it like for you walking in the doors of that house immediately? You step foot in there, you don't necessarily know much of the history. So what's going through your mind? What are you feeling? What are you picking up on?
I picked up on the burial mound before even walking in. I kind of took a look at the backyard, and I was like, well, there's one. And hearing that from the owner was good validation for me. And then I walked in, and it was like, honestly, surreal for me. I was like, well, that's what I saw before I came here. Or, you know, I had this experience. Or, oh, yeah, there's the residual activity of the abuse that I had picked up on. You know, and it was like I said, very surreal. It's like living in a dream or a nightmare, for that matter. I had goosebumps from head to toe walking in there, because I realized the things that I had seen were being validated just walking in the house, you know, getting those feelings that I had felt before even coming to Indiana was a huge validation for me, especially since I had recently opened back up. And it's like, oh, wow. You know, not only am I in this very haunted location, but at that point, since I had opened back up, I hadn't had any validations like that. It's like when Ryan, our researcher for our team, he played back the interview separate from us. And he had been in the back seat when I was writing, and he saw child abuse and hanging and suicide and things like that. And when he got that knowledge from the owner, he couldn't believe, even though he saw me writing it down, not knowing anything about the house on the way there. So, you know, when I pick up things, I'll pull out my journal and start writing it down. So he had goosebumps knowing that he had seen me write that stuff down.
Mm-hmm.
So it was very surreal walking in there.
What was the rest of the team experiencing as they did their research of the home?
Like I had said, after walking in there. They knew it was very haunted. They knew we were going to find something there. And they were excited. But like I said, as soon as we got in there and the owner started giving the warnings about people getting in car accidents, leaving there and things like that, they were very unnerved to be there, excited but unnerved. Mm-hmm. And I was the same once I got into the house and started experiencing the things that I had already experienced prior to going in. But the interesting thing about that house is not only the history, but the things that continue to happen there now. The owner, he has been trying to flip this house for the last 10 years, and he's been doing developments and construction and things of that nature in this house for the last 10 years, and he can't seem to get a crew that can stay in that house long enough past 2 weeks to work on the house because of the experiences that they keep happening. Like, he'll tell them, like, there's this happening and this happening, and they're like, oh, well, we don't believe in that stuff. We'll be fine as long as you're paying us. Well, then they go in the house and they start having these experiences, and he can't even keep a crew there. So it's very interesting that he's been trying to fix this house up for the last 10 years, pretty much by himself, because of the experiences that they've been having there.
It's the house that almost gets people to believe in ghosts if they don't. What are some of those experiences specifically that the crews are having?
I know that Eddie himself did not believe before purchasing his house. He had no idea of the history until after he started having experiences. And he said that he couldn't understand this big house was so cheap, and he couldn't understand why. And so then he got the house through auction or whatever, and he ended up buying the house with a flip it, like I said. Well, he started working in there. It wasn't long after purchasing the house, he started working on it, that his brother was helping him. Well, one night he was working in there alone, and he was expecting his brother to show up. Well, he's sitting in the upstairs working on that area, and he had his radio playing, and they were kind of separating the electricity. He didn't have electricity on the whole house, just certain parts of it, and because they're working on electrical elsewhere. And so upstairs was where he was working, and he kept hearing footsteps. He called out to his brother, and no one was answering. Well, then somebody out of the corner of his eye, he saw something walk past, or someone walk past where he was working, and he called out again and went to go look for his brother, and there was no one up there. So he ended up getting panicked and ended up climbing out the second story window in the middle of the night where he was working. And that was kind of where he started to see, okay, well, there's something going on here. And so he was telling us a couple weeks later, he was working on his ladder, and he was downstairs, and all of a sudden he saw this black mass come down from the ceiling, and it scared the living daylights out of him, and he ended up leaving again from the house, just kind of like panicked, ran out. And he was very, very much a believer after that point. It turns out now that his wife doesn't even want to come in the house. And then his sister-in-law, his brother who was working, his sister-in-law was kind of making fun of the house, saying, oh no, there's nothing going on here. And they were like asking questions of all the spirits there. And then she had an experience. She won't go into detail, but she had an experience that it's to the point now where if someone wants to interview her, it has to be over the phone, or it has to be via the church across the street. She won't even go onto the property, let alone inside the house. So it seems like everyone that steps foot in there will have some type of experience that can't be explained, and that was the case with us as well.
On that note, what exactly, who do you think the spirits are? Because obviously you talked about the history earlier and the various individuals who had spent time there and had portions of their life experiences there. Are you able to identify who you think is haunting the house, if it is the people who did spend portions of their lives behind those walls?
I believe that the burial mounds in the backyard are Native American related.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like a lot of the history, like the negative history, comes from that, because the house was built upon that situation of, you know, the Native Americans. You hear stories all the time, don't bother their burial mounds, they're very sacred to them. And I feel like the black mass has to be related to that. The spirits of the Native Americans are very frustrated that there's basically a house built upon where they're buried. I do believe that that's the black mass and the negative entity that's there. I also believe that there is some residual energy from the abuse left over from the children. Specifically, the children did not die in the house, but I do believe that there's some residual stuff, it's kind of like a loop, some negative energy from that.
Mm-hmm.
Upstairs specifically. The other issue that I feel is that Eddie, because the owner could not obviously rent out the home, he decided that he's going to turn it into a paranormal museum. So kind of like an occult museum. And he's been taking in artifacts from all over the world that are supposedly haunted. Upstairs, he has a doll room. And he has all these supposed haunted dolls. And he's got like a Ouija board in the cabinet and stuff like that. So I feel like that kind of bringing in more. And he has to make a living somehow, because he took this hit on this house, trying to fix it up. That's what he's kind of doing. And I totally understand that. But at the same time, it's bringing more activity within the house.
Yeah.
I also believe that one of the spirits there, like I said earlier, is a man that is very religious. And he uses his religion to kind of hide behind his wrongdoings. So kind of has a God complex, if you will.
Sure.
And he does not like women. He feels very threatened by women and likes to attack them. My other medium on our team, Carrie, she was actually attacked. I usually do not try to provoke spirits, but like I said, the last time we were there, the first time, he was very threatening to one of the ladies on our team, and was kind of, it's almost as if he was standing right upon her and breathing down her neck. And as soon as one of our guys came in there, he kind of took off. And so I took that upon myself the second time we had gone there to kind of, not necessarily provoke, but kind of call him out in a way. I went in there with three very strong women from our team, and one that is strong mentally, but maybe physically not as strong. And she was actually scratched and pinched to the point where there was actually a mark on her back in this room. And I called him out and said, why are you so afraid of women? Why do we threaten you? You know, you don't get to hurt us. You don't get to threaten us. And he did not like that, and pinched the weakest physically out of all of us. And so that was very interesting. So I definitely think he's still there. And I would not be surprised if it's the gentleman who originally was abusive to his family that ended up going to where he felt the most powerful. In life, and so that's where he resides now in death. We don't have too many names. I did get a name, Mary, for the woman who committed suicide upstairs in the closet. And I do think that there may be a spirit of a little boy who actually died in the house. Not in the far past, but the recent past. And I do recall getting EVPs of a little boy saying mommy multiple times. But I don't know his name. But I just find that very interesting that he was still looking for his mom. I don't think that he knows he's passed. And that is why he's looking for his mom now. And he's stuck there. They said even paranormal lockdown had the gentleman that did the ground penetrating radar that had found the burial mounds. And they had also found body remains in the crawl space. Nick Ross himself on the show had found the remains there underneath the crawl space. And they'd also found a piece of cloth that had a lock of hair and a broken woman's locket, which I found interesting with things that I experienced, but like I said, I can't talk about.
Mm-hmm.
They thought that it was the occult related, but I feel like it's something completely different. I do feel like it was some type of kill trophy of some sort.
Mm-hmm.
And so that is kind of what I've experienced, but I can't go into too much detail just because the person involved is still alive. So the last time we were there, I actually have video proof. We had set up our REM pods, which is basically, like, for people that don't know, it detects changes in the electromagnetic field when something that has those properties comes within it, and it's believed that spirits have, you know, can change the electromagnetic field of the location around it and cause fluctuations. And so that being said, we had set up one, and we didn't have any thing while we were in the room, but as soon as we turned the corner to walk out, I was still videotaping, and it started going off, which I found very interesting. It almost waited until we left the room to kind of check out that tool that we were using. So that was very cool. Another thing I'd like to say about the house, while you do tend to get activity, the interesting thing about this house is that it almost plays tricks on you, in that you will be in one room and you'll get activity through instrumentation like the REM pod or other things in another room. And as soon as you run to that room to check it out, stuff will stop there and happen in another room. It's almost like it wants to wear down your energy and take your energy by having you chase. It's like a wild goose chase. And I found after we got home, we had watched other YouTube channels and things of that nature from other investigations that have gone there. I didn't watch it before because, like I said, I didn't want any knowledge of anyone's experiences there before going into the house. But after the fact, we had looked up that information, and it seems like everyone that goes there has the same issue, where it's almost like a wild goose chase to come into contact with spirit. The only thing that we did get for certain while in that room was upstairs getting the EVPs of the little boy looking for his mom. So that was kind of disheartening to experience, because you think about children's spirits, you either end up having something that's pretending to be a child or an actual child. And it's always very sad to think about somebody who didn't get to live their full life and is kind of lost and stuck there.
Sure.
You know? So,
what was it that brought you to want to investigate that property?
Actually, our other medium on our team lives in Indiana. She lives about 45 minutes away. And she became friends with Eddie, the owner, before we ended up going there. And so she kind of got us in there. So she knew about the house because she had been there previously. But she didn't tell me anything personally, because, like I told you, and I told her, I don't want to know anything. I want to be validated in anything that I get. And so she told the other members, but not me. And so she got us in there, and it did not disappoint. And I would love to go there again. Like I said, every time I go to that house, I get something new, and it draws me in even more. It keeps calling me back. And I feel like, if I remember correctly, Nick Ross from Paranormal Lockdown said the same thing, that it keeps drawing him back. And that's why they did two episodes on that show at the Mineral House. And so I find him and Katrina very brave, because they actually were there by themselves, where as we, as a team, we did not go anywhere by ourselves. Upstairs, we had two of our guys in the rooms by themselves, but they were still on the same floor together, and we're right next to each other in the bedroom. Otherwise, we stayed together, at least in groups of two. So I didn't even want to go to the bathroom upstairs by myself. I had nobody wait outside the door. That's how the air in that house makes you feel. You know, it's very threatening. But yeah, it was very, very interesting experience there. I highly recommend it if there are other investigators that want to take advantage of it. He's still working on putting the museum together. Like I said, he's got artifacts from Aleister Crowley there. He's got haunted dolls from all over the world. It's crazy.
It really is. I mean, it sounds like when you put anything in a haunted house, and this is an opinion-based question, you have a house that already has its own set of spirits, and you add haunted objects to it, could that not right there significantly increase the energy of the spirits that are already in the house? Because just add more to the house? I mean, what's your opinion on that?
I definitely feel that it definitely adds more. I feel like at times it's almost like we were in the one room downstairs. We called the blue room, and it literally felt like we were being surrounded. No joke. It's like everywhere you turn, there's spirits around you. And some of them want to communicate. Some of them want to get their story told. And other ones are being told, like, they're telling them not to say anything. Don't say anything. Don't say anything. And that's exactly, like, the tension we felt while we were there both times. I definitely feel like upstairs with the haunted doll room, there's a lot going on upstairs. And then when the entrance that he takes you in is in the back. And there's this room that he has a couple artifacts, and he's got like a case or like a window that has some what are they called, mourning portraits, as in not like mourning daytime, but mourning when somebody passes, you're in mourning. Mm-hmm. They're portraits of back in the day. They used to take pictures of the dead after they set them up, as if they're still alive. They would take pictures of them. He's got a couple of those, probably about 3 or 4 of them.
Sure.
A couple of them are children, and it makes me wonder if some of the children that were experiencing in the house aren't from those portraits that may not know they're dead. You know, they see their own face on the wall and they don't realize, you know, hey, that's me, but why am I there? You know, where's my mom? And so I feel like that could also come into play as well. The initial experiences they had, obviously, like I said, he did not believe at that time. And even now, he's very still skeptical of what comes across, but he won't stay in the house. He only works during the day, and at nighttime, he won't stay in the house. As soon as the sun starts going down, he leaves, and he kind of leaves us to our work. He now has a alarm system in there because of the notoriety of the house now is out there. He has an alarm system, but he'll come in, unset the alarm, and you know, reset it for people so they can go in and out.
Yeah.
And then he'll tell us the history and then he'll leave. He doesn't even stay with us. So that goes to show you, you know, even he feels like stuff is amplified.
Yeah.
And initially when he had investigators in there, he was just trying to figure out what was going on. But now that he kind of has an idea of possibly what he's dealing with, he's added more to it, like I said, with the artifact. And it's interesting that the house, when you go in the back door, our team was calling that the safe room. So when we went into what we called the safe room, which is the initial door, the entrance area that he takes you in, the owner, we called it the safe room because it's the only room where we felt comfortable. Part of the house, like I said, doesn't have electricity or lights. You do have to bring flashlights there if you're there in the evening or at night to kind of navigate through the house. But this room had electricity. It had a heater because we were there in the early parts of March and it was still cold. And so it was like 50 degrees in the house. So we had a heater, a little external heater in there. So I'm not sure if it felt like it was safe because of the electricity and the heat, but it almost seems like on the other side of the door, like I was saying earlier, where they kind of surround you, it's like they were waiting for you on either side of the door. Because there's the entrance to the house, and then there's the doorway to the rest of the house downstairs, and there's the doorway to the stairwell upstairs. So like I said, on either side of the door, it seemed like they were kind of just waiting for you on the other side, they being the spirits. And as soon as you walked out of that room, you no longer felt safe. You no longer felt comfortable. It's like they were just breathing down your neck. But the interesting thing is, you wouldn't have activity right in front of you, with the exception of the EVPs that we had and my friend being pinched. Other than that, you know, everything, it's like you're being chased or it's getting you to chase it. So,
and interesting, we were talking earlier about some of the former residents were talking about it being on a burial ground. If we're talking about a burial ground, and this, when you have a haunting because of the structure being on such a spot, is it the spirits of those who are buried who are returning to haunt the house, or is it something else? Is it almost like a curse of sorts where it's other energies that are being summoned to seek some sort of vengeance on those who desecrated sacred ground?
In my personal opinion, I feel like it's a curse. I feel like with the hugely negative entity there, I don't feel that it's human at all. Mm-hmm. I feel like it is otherworldly in that it was never human, and almost like what I would imagine, like a skinwalker, in the Native American lore, where it's pure evil and there is no appeasing it. And going through the history of the house, looking at the stories that the owner had found themselves about the accidents and things like that, it seems like anyone that actually lives in that house is cursed.
Mm-hmm.
It seems like the accidents, the deaths that occurred there, which I can't go into too much detail because the person of the mother of the son is still living, but mm-hmm. you know, the people that live there, things like that, it definitely seems like it's a curse that no matter who stays there. And like I said, he couldn't get any workers to stay there for longer than 2 weeks because of them being so afraid of what's going on there.
That wraps up part one of our conversation. In part two of our conversation with Jessica, we'll ask, is there a level of danger when someone takes a haunted house and adds haunted objects to it? Why did Jessica and her team decide to investigate this house? What do the spirits want in this specific home? And when she left, did the emotions that she felt with the home follow her? And what are the stories of the house around the community? All of that and more in part two of our conversation. To hear it, become a Gravekeeper. That's a supporter of our program. Sign up at thegravetalks.com. Click Become a Gravekeeper or directly at patreon.com/thegravetalks. When you become a Gravekeeper, you get access to part two of our interviews, every single episode part two, as well as advanced episodes of the program weeks before they're released to the public. Check it out at patreon.com/thegravetalks. Until next time, for The Grave Talks, I'm Tony Bruschi. Thanks for listening.